Welcome to GW HealthCast. Joining us today is Dr. Michael Whalen. He's an associate professor of urology at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences, and he's the chief of urologic oncology and the director of genitourinary multidisciplinary clinic at the George Washington University Hospital. He's here to discuss prostate cancer robotic treatment.
I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Wilner. Welcome, Dr. Whalen.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Dr. Whalen. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most important, mysterious, and less well-known organs of the body, the prostate. So tell us, what does the prostate do anyway?
So the prostate is an accessory sex gland. It basically provides fluid for sperm to assist in the insemination process, right? So it's an organ that lines the urethra and, as I said, provides fluid. So the functional aspect of it is very important, I suppose, physiologically for procreation. And when that organ becomes cancerous, which unfortunately happens as the most common cause of cancer in men, we are forced to determine whether this cancer can be watched or this cancer needs to be treated.
And so is surgery the usual treatment?
Well, that's a great question. So, in fact, the majority of prostate cancers diagnosed in this country can be monitored at first because we do a widespread screening program of what's called PSA testing or prostate-specific antigen testing. So it's recommended to be done, especially for men who have a family history of prostate or breast cancer or who are African American, to have their PSA blood test checked starting between age 40 and 45 if you're higher risk. For those who do not have family history, then starting around age 55 is recommended, and that allows us to detect the disease at an early stage. And if those screening guidelines are followed and patients are plugged in to their primary care doctors and, you know, kind of follow their recommendations, if we do see a rising level of that PSA blood test, then we may do a biopsy and diagnose prostate cancer, but about 50 to 60% of them are in a low risk category that could be watched at first and may require additional biopsies or other surveillance procedures, but may not require one of the traditional treatments such as surgery or radiation. Now, for those patients who have more aggressive or higher grade cells on their biopsy, then certainly surgery is an option. And some would argue that it is the gold standard option for curing the disease, especially for those men who have a projected long life expectancy.
All right, I'm going to push you a little bit on this PSA topic because I'm 66 years old, and as it turned out, I went to the doctor yesterday for my annual physical, and he drew a PSA. And I don't have the result back, so I'm quite curious. But I don't understand the logic that if the level is high enough and the biopsy is positive, why you would watch it. In other words, you know it's there. It's not going to go away on its own, I think. So tell me, what is the logic for surveillance?
That's a great question. So the interest in surveillance comes from the potential side effects of other treatment options, such as surgery or radiation. And these can be quality of life detriments, such as incontinence or an impact on declining sexual performance with surgery, or bladder and intestinal dysfunction from radiation. The technology has improved greatly over the years. So modern rates of these side effects with modern technology, such as robotic surgery or what's called intensity modulated radiotherapy, are low and acceptable. But certainly not doing treatment has the best side effect profile. But as you mentioned, you know, what is the risk of continued progression of the disease, and are we actually forfeiting a chance for cure? So active surveillance and the interest in close monitoring was born out of the fact that many of these prostate cancers are slow growing and would never be lethal in someone's life, especially if someone's diagnosed, you know, in their early to mid 70s. The negatives outweigh the positives in terms of these potential side effects. Now, as experience has increased with things like robotic surgery, because of the acceptable low side effect profile, you know, it's interesting that this conventional approach to watching may be questioned. So what you're saying is, well, we diagnose something, we know that it's in the prostate, it hasn't spread, so now's the best time that we can remove the prostate with surgery and cure it, but we're deciding, oh, let's just watch, right? So in some ways, that doesn't make sense. We want to minimize the morbidity or the side effects. And it is true that there are some groups of men who are diagnosed with localized prostate cancer that might be at higher risk of progressing, such as those with family history or higher volume disease, or even men that are African American. So for them, we might think twice about a program of close monitoring, but that's where individualized decision making comes into play and having a discussion with your urologist or your surgeon to come up with a personalized treatment approach. Because it's true that not one size fits all in terms of how we're going to treat this. And there are a certain number of men who may be diagnosed with low-risk disease. We end up choosing treatment because of what we refer to as patient anxiety, and a sort of a clumsy way to describe that, but just meaning that they opt for treatment to reduce the risk of the disease progressing in the future. Now, one way to look at it is, well, you know, if you don't get treated right away, maybe we can buy a couple years maximal quality of life in terms of your sexual performance, the kind of disease hanging over your head, but a low likelihood of spreading. And some people may look at it, well, I want to act as soon as possible to make sure that no microscopic cells spread. And it has been reported that even if we are surgically able to remove the disease, if it has started to penetrate through the wall of the prostate, it's at higher risk of coming back. And actually, there's higher risk of death from prostate cancer in that setting. So although active surveillance is a good approach to try to avoid treatment in well-selected patients, there are some patients that might benefit from therapy up front. That is very true.
So I think, you know, in the extreme case, if I was 99 years old with a lot of other medical problems and somehow somebody probably wouldn't even order the PSA, but if they did and it was positive, you might say, well, let's just, you know, watch it. But I think the bottom line is you need to see a specialist, because each person really does have their own view of what they want and then what's possible and the extent of their disease and I guess the type of cell. There really are a lot of factors to consider. Is that right?
Exactly. And a lot of people know someone, either a friend or a family member who's been diagnosed with prostate cancer or who may have been treated for prostate cancer, because the disease is so prevalent. It happens in about 1 in 7 or 8 Caucasian men, about 1 in 5 or 6 African American men. So despite statistics being what they are, and you know what the physician's perspective is, you know, the person's perspective may be swayed by these experiences, like with, you know, one uncle or, you know, or a brother, you know, someone very close. And if, you know, depending on how that person fared with or without treatment, you know, that influences
sure.
the person's perspective. So it's my role, you know, not to discount those things at all, but to take them into consideration and understand where a person's coming from as we're discussing whether treatment is a good idea. And in some ways, it's investing in the future, because prostate cancer, even when it's aggressive, may take about 10 years to be fatal, right? So when someone opts for treatment when they're in their early 60s, the idea is that it's preventing a disseminated incurable disease from forming that can cause a lot of different medical issues such as bone fractures, kidney blockage, pelvic pain, blood in the urine, things like that, you know, that are undesirable. The decision to be treated in your 60s prevents these things from happening in your 80s, right? And I think everyone would want to live, you know, sort of as long as possible. Although even then, you know, we want to not just opt for quantity of life over quality of life. And that's where, as a surgeon, using the tools that I've been taught, I think I can help with that, not only to cure the disease, but also offer a superlative quality of life in terms of getting people recovered from incontinence after surgery and getting people's sexual performance and erections to be functional after surgery if it's, you know, within my control as a surgeon.
Right. We want everything to work at least as well as it did before.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want the cure to be worse than the disease itself.
Now, you mentioned the robot. Tell me about the robot.
So the Da Vinci robot is used in a lot of different surgeries and a lot of different specialties. It was originally developed, I think, for telesurgery with the military, and that was scrapped because of the, although short, conspicuous delay between the operator on one end and perhaps the robot, you know, farther away, you know, hundreds or thousands of miles away. But it was incorporated into surgery and is ideal for use for prostate surgery because the prostate is very, very deep in the body, in the pelvis. So the robot doesn't do anything on its own. It's not an autonomous agent. It's basically just a tool that allows more precise control from the surgeon, magnified 3D vision, and more precise 7 degrees of freedom motion with the surgical instrument. So it's used in a type of minimally invasive surgery to do prostatectomy. It's revolutionized the delivery of this type of surgery, and there's several benefits such as less pain, faster recovery, shorter hospital stay, and importantly, less bleeding during the course of the operation. So it has replaced traditional open surgery as the new standard of care. There's also some reports that suggest improvement in sexual performance outcomes and even continence outcomes using the robot compared to traditional open surgery. It's a little more controversial, but certainly because our understanding of the neuroanatomy of the cavernous nerves, or what we call the neurovascular bundle that travels on each side of the prostate, has been very clarified and made more concrete with robotic surgery because of this magnified vision.
Well, that sounds great. Well, to conclude, Dr. Whalen, what advice would you have for somebody like me that just got a PSA test and comes back high? What do I do?
Well, so getting consultation with a urologist is very important. We have several other tests beyond the PSA that can give us a sense of not only the risk of prostate cancer, but the risk of the higher grade forms of the disease that would benefit from treatment as opposed to close watching or active surveillance. So discussing the existence of these tests and how they should be used. Another test that we employ very frequently is a prostate multiparametric MRI to take a picture of the prostate and determine whether there's suspicious lesions that might serve as a target for biopsy. And then if prostate cancer is diagnosed, having a thorough discussion and often multidisciplinary care involving the expertise of a urologist or urologic oncologist, along with a radiation specialist and even a medical oncologist, to help develop a personalized and precision treatment approach that takes not only the disease characteristics into account, but the person's own desires and expectations.
Now, do you have all of those things available at George Washington?
It's a very good question and a very good follow-up question. We do. So we routinely, twice a month, the first and third Friday of the month, have our genitourinary multidisciplinary clinic where each of those services, urology, medical oncology, and radiation oncology, is at hand to discuss the details of what treatment involving each of those technologies would look like. And I think it's a fundamental component of the care pathway. It allows patients to ask questions. It allows them more time and a second opinion, essentially, because no matter how in-depth we get during a consultation, it's true that they probably will only retain about 40% of what I say. So, you know, in an effort to be thorough, I don't want them really drinking from a fire hose to the extent that we can avoid it. So the multidisciplinary clinic is, I would say, indispensable and fundamental to how we do things at GW.
Well, that's good to know. And I know where to find you if I need you. So I want to thank you very much, Dr. Whalen, for this great discussion of modern approaches to prostate cancer and treatment.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on GW HealthCast. To schedule an appointment, please call 1-888-GW-DOCS or visit gwhospital.com for more information or to get connected with one of our providers. Please also remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and all the other fascinating podcasts from the George Washington University Hospital Library. Physicians are independent practitioners who are not employees or agents of the George Washington University Hospital. The hospital shall not be liable for actions or treatments provided by physicians. Individual results may vary. There are risks associated with any procedure. Speak with your physician about these risks to find out if surgical procedures are right for you.